Not since the Civil War has the United States experienced a more bitter and divisive conflict than Vietnam. Across the nation, young Americans filled the streets, their signs and voices raised in angry protest. 10,000 miles away, a different group of Americans greets another day. It's a day during which the lush, fertile rice paddies of Southeast Asia will be rocked by violence. A day when young men will die for their country. One more day in Vietnam. We've landed on the big airfield at Da Nang and will travel directly to the headquarters of the 3rd Marine Amphibious Force for a briefing by the operations officer.
Militarily speaking, South Vietnam is divided into four areas. The 4th Corps area in the south, the 3rd Corps, the 2nd Corps, and in the north, the 1st Corps, or as we call it, the I Corps area. The 3rd Marine Amphibious Force is responsible for all United States military operations in the I Corps area. Located here, in about the center of the I Corps area, is our major operational base of Da Nang. You will recall that it was at Da Nang that the initial landings were made by the 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade. This is now our largest operational base. At about here, approximately 50 miles to the south of Da Nang, is the operational base at Chu Lai. Our third operational base is approximately 45 miles to the north of Da Nang. It is the base at Wei Phu Ba.
These Marines have just returned from a tough battle in the north and are now maintaining a defensive perimeter. Their weapons are painstakingly cleaned and cared for before a thought can be given to personal comfort. This is neither a clean nor an easy life, but these men have learned to accept the physical hardships of battle as their fathers did before them. In their famous hymn, Marines recount battles fought in every place and climate. In Vietnam, they proved their ability in all terrain. From the soft ooze of the rice paddies, they wade through swift running canals and streams. Then push forward into the jungles that fringe the mountains, where elephant grass tears at the skin, vines tangle the feet, and giant trees obscure the sun. The hardships go beyond long walks in intense tropical heat. Each and every step must be measured. This is, after all, war. The enemy has prepared the way with mines and booby traps. A single false step, and your ankle is pierced by the nails of a crudely cunning trap that only digs deeper as you fight to pull away. A hidden shell waits for the unwary foot, as deadly as any mine at a tenth of the cost. You'll never know which innocent-looking piece of grass or fern covers a pit of sharp, poison-tipped bamboo spikes. Marine engineers must constantly sweep the roads and trails in search of silent killers. Marines initiate literally hundreds of small patrols and ambushes throughout the I Corps area each week. One of the most difficult jobs in this war without a front is to distinguish friend from foe. In a war zone, everyone must be identified and searched. Most, after only a short delay, continue on, but a few prove more difficult. The American patrol strikes pay dirt. Several Viet Cong guerrillas are discovered hiding in the village. They will be interrogated, and information gathered from them used to pinpoint the location of nearby enemy forces. Armed with this knowledge, The Marines formulate a strike mission. The force moves quickly. As they approach the enemy position, they are met by intense small arms fire. There is nowhere to hide, and casualties are inevitable. The Viet Cong are well dug in. The strike force calls for artillery support. A forward observer provides the exact location of the enemy force. With friendly elements so near, the margin for error is slim. Targeting must be precise. At last, the enemy is pried loose from his encampment. Now the troops can make the final assault and move in, destroying enemy equipment and supplies. It is a modest victory, to be sure, but a victory nonetheless. A Vietnamese farmer's entire world is a thatched hut, a small rice paddy, his wife and children. For the past quarter of a century, his village has been a battleground. When the VC wanted food, they took his rice. When they wanted soldiers, they shanghaied his sons. When a village chief objected, he was executed. When his neighbors protested, they were beaten. The Viet Cong told him the Marines would come to seize homes, murder children, and enslave entire families. Anyone who helped Americans, the VC said, would be tortured and killed. That the farmer trusts no one is not surprising. Many of the hamlets are known to be friendly, but even they must be approached cautiously. Emotional reactions are primal when villagers are confronted by men with weapons. It is a part of the job of American troops to build trust among the locals. Confidence grows slowly, nurtured by little acts of mercy and promises fulfilled. The Navy corpsman with his bar of soap and his bag of medical gear is always a welcome sight to the Vietnamese people. When the Viet Cong are driven out of an area, a combined action company is formed to provide security for the village. Marines and South Vietnamese forces train with local militiamen, their patrols and ambushes preventing Viet Cong reinfiltration. For the time being, the villagers can lead their lives unmolested. The battle on water is different. Rivers are Vietnam's highways. For many of the Blue Jackets, it is an unusual new kind of shallow water warfare. Operating fast, small boats and shallow draft transports, they hunt down and destroy the waterborne Viet Cong. This day, American sailors act as advisors to the Vietnamese Navy as they move their troops along the water high roads for an attack on a riverside VC encampment. Just off the coast, other men of the Navy and Coast Guard are on constant patrol to stop and search thousands of small ships and junks. Most carry the stuff of everyday life. A few carry contraband, supplies intended for the Viet Cong. The American blockade is known as Operation Market Time. It involves the surveillance of 1,000 miles of coast from the 17th parallel to the Gulf of Siam. It's painstaking, often tedious duty, but it's drying up one arterial lifeline from North Vietnam. Well offshore in the deep blue of the China Sea is the backbone of our Navy's forces, the aircraft carrier. It's a floating mobile air base. More than 4,000 men live and work on this city at sea. To keep the ship operational and its pilots in the air requires the effort of a community of engineers, clerks, doctors, mechanics, pipe fitters, radar men, cooks, and bakers. Their working day averages 12 hours, but it can be 18 or even longer when air operations are underway. Planes are launched and recovered at 30-second intervals. About half of all the combat sorties over North Vietnam have been flown by Navy and Marine pilots. It's a dangerous job, and not all of the planes return. A search and rescue helicopter hurries on its way when the radio distress call Mayday signals a pilot in trouble. He could be down in the open sea or deep in the jungle. He's almost certainly alone and vulnerable in enemy territory. The rescue helicopter's job is to find the downed pilot and bring him back. On this mission, photographed by a Navy cameraman, the pilot was forced to eject beside a rocky cliff along the forbidding coastline a few miles south of the North Vietnamese city of Haiphong. The helicopter can't get close enough for a direct lift, so a swimmer hits the water. Search and rescue is costly, difficult, and dangerous. But it's cheaper than training new pilots, and is a small tribute to pay to those whose lives are at risk. Many other ships accompany the carrier. One is the destroyer, the Tin Can, the workhorse of the fleet. Destroyers are indispensable to the Marines ashore and the Navy at sea. They provide the skillfully placed fire that has often been vital to the success of Marine infantry operations ashore. Another fleet operation in the South China Sea is the Amphibious Task Force. It supports teams of Marines and their helicopters that collectively are known as the Special Landing Force. They operate from a specially designed ship that is a combination troop ship and helicopter carrier. It can deploy an entire special landing force on only a few minutes' warning. Striking in helicopters and amphibious assault vehicles, the Marines form a highly effective two-pronged assault. In today's operation, these Marines are part of the air attack group. As they head toward land and a new battlefield, the minds of the fighting men are occupied with their own thoughts, their own prayers. As they race toward the unknown, even the battle-hardened vets feel a knot in the pit of their stomach. The unspoken questions linger as the helicopter brings them closer and closer to an uncertain future. It's the Navy Marine Corps team specialty, assault from the sea. An amphibious force miles offshore launches a surprise assault against an enemy encampment. Helicopters laden with battle-ready Marines lead the two-pronged attack, heading for an inland landing zone behind enemy defenses. The helicopter force blocks the enemy from escaping to the west, while other Marines in amphibious assault vehicles hit the beach to meet the enemy head-on. As Marines push through the dense growth of the jungle, they're worried about more than just human adversaries. They must also battle Mother Nature. A river to cross is a welcome coolness, but its waters support 3-inch leeches that slip inside clothing and fasten on the skin. The wounds they leave are easily infected in this humid climate. Deep jungle ravines make the troopers fight for every foot advanced. Watch where you step and where you grab. A harmless-looking vine might be a poisonous snake. Even the trees in this rainforest are hostile. They grow so thick, their triple canopies bring darkness at noon. Hang on to the man in front of you, or you're lost in this midnight gloom. The enemy has good position and appears to be superior in numbers, so the Marines call in their equalizer, their support from the sky. Approaching the target area, the pilots contact the forward air controller. This Marine is an aviator attached to a ground unit. He gives the pilots all the information they need to fly pinpoint close air support for the ground troops. The fire from the sky evens the odds. Still, there are casualties. While the Navy corpsmen give on-scene emergency aid, a medical evacuation team is being brought in by that mechanical angel of mercy called the helicopter. Usually less than 30 minutes after being hit, a seriously wounded man is in the operating room, either at a field hospital or aboard the hospital ship USS Repose. Though battle wounds are the cause of most of the serious casualties, there are many more that result from the environment. Heat prostration, trench foot, malaria. These can be as devastating to our combat effectiveness as bullets or booby traps. The Red Cross, which symbolizes our medical units, is not the only cross in Vietnam. Wherever the Marines and sailors go, the chaplain also goes. Whether it is for moral or spiritual counseling, a friendly word to a lonely man, or the softening of unpleasant news from home. The chaplain is on the scene. Be it a stretch of sand or a clearing in the jungle, it becomes a church, and he sets up his altar. The men gather to worship in the same familiar routine of devotion as their families back home. As he holds service, the chaplain cannot dismiss the thought, will they all return? He knows full well that his congregation won't all come back alive. He's there for those who die also. Prayers are said. A letter is written home to the family. Yet so little can be done for one who has given so much. There will be no more tales of his exciting adventure in a far-off land. No more plans for his education, his family, his home. He may have been a lad, not quite a man in years, but he gave a man's greatest treasure. His life. And he gave it not unknowingly. These men prove every day they understand the why of Vietnam. Listen to the words of those who fight this war. The day I left home to come over here, I kissed my kids goodbye and my wife had tears in her eyes. I'm just like thousands of other servicemen here in Vietnam who dream of seeing their families and loved ones again. It's a lousy war, as is any war, but it's going to be fought sometime, someplace. If and when my time to go comes, I will go. I'll go because I know the meaning of the word freedom. I'll go because I love my family. I love my country, and I love my God. Call it any name you will, from foolishness to sacrifice, but be sure to include love. This is the end of our day in Vietnam. A glimpse of the war as it is being waged all day, every day, by a generation of young men growing up in a hurry, 18, 19, 20 years old. They were boys when they got here. They've become men overnight. Thank you.